Welcome to Prague Will Find a Way podcast. I'm Jonathan Block.
And I'm Jay Valade.
Going to introduce a new, I was going to call it segment, but this is going to be a full episode. We're going to try something different on the kind of top three a lot of channels and podcasts do. It could be I'm coming up with my top three of a band and Jay's coming up with his, and then we kind of debate it. But instead, we decided let's make it more fun and difficult. So we have to essentially come up with the top three together and agree
together.
On
together.
Yeah, so I'm sure...
Not only the top three, but the order.
The order as well. So I'm sure there'll be a lot of screaming and yelling, but all in the name of Prague. So for our inaugural edition, we picked King Crimson.
We did.
We have the original, 69 to 84 canon out here in the deluxe editions. These are the 40th anniversaries, I think.
Yes.
So with the DVDs or Blu-rays?
I believe they were Blu-rays.
DVD
on this
DVDs.
One.
Yeah, DVDs. Yeah, it should go down to that.
DVD.
Yeah, okay. So these were all DVD audio, and they're doing Blu-rays on the box sets.
Of course.
That have to be.
unlike the Yes canon, I have shied away from the giant box sets of King Crimson.
Not
because I don't like them, but because I find myself listening to these if I'm going to listen to it, and I have a bunch of Crimson extra stuff, but I don't have every single thing. So I you're more the completest.
Yeah, I mean, they're, I guess if I picked a favorite band, they would probably be it. So I have a lot of stuff, although not everything. I mean, I have all the official albums and a lot of the live stuff, but I don't have all the box sets either. On the reason why is because I bought a lot of live stuff from these guys when they started the online
on the
club, not just the CDs, but the downloads too. I bought a lot of stuff, particularly of the 70, 70, the Lars Tungs at Al Band. I did buy the, we're kind of getting into it now because, I'm a big fan of Wake. Big fan of Wake in the middle there, and so I did buy the Islands box set, and I am a big fan of the Islands live band. I love Earthbound. I love that whole. They got funky, but it was also the only version that you were going to hear a number of these songs until obviously the 2014 plus band that played a lot of the old stuff. So and I have a Lars Tungs box too because that's probably my favorite Crimson album.
All right, so just as an overview, we've got the very first album, In the Court of the Crimson King, and then we've got the early 70s, which still had remnants of this band that slowly but surely turned into something else. Wake of Poseidon, Lizard, Islands. Then we have the next phase of Crimson, which is when
the 72-74 band, 74. The classic quartet,
where John Wetton, David Cross, and Bill Bruford and Robert Fripp were joined by others,
and Jamie Muir at the beginning
and then Mel Collins, etc.
And Ian McDonald's,
so we have Lars Tungs and Aspect, Starless and Bible Black and Red. Then we have the 80s version, which was Tony Levin, Bill Bruford,
Adrian Blue
and Robert Fripp, with Discipline, Beat, and Three of a Perfect Pair. After that, we have our 90s stuff, which is
also in this era, official discography releases is Earthbound and USA.
Correct.
And Young Person's Guide, which we've talked about before. In the past,
I don't know.
No, I mean,
I don't think I even have that anymore.
I mean,
Then they had Vroom, they had Thrack, they had Construction of Light, and they had
Power to Believe. And a number of other
live
EPs and things as well. Probably it the later stuff. I mean, nobody's going to pick Baboom as their favorite Crimson album, were they?
Somebody could.
Or the Vroom.
Crimson is EP. Going to be is an interesting thing to talk about because we've got the very first album, which is, the template for progressive rock almost, right? And then you've got the 80s stuff, which is drawing more upon the music of the time.
Right. Yeah.
And it's, you wouldn't put these two bands together as being the same band at all.
No. They, this was every album, almost every album, every era has a different thing. Fripp is the only constant after a while.
Yeah.
It's so funny because we have them kind of prepared here geometrically, and it just happens they work out in threes, right? A lot of the eras were three, but I could objectively look at this and say, if most people were doing this, this is what they would pick as the top three. Not in this order, but it would be this and red and discipline. Like, that's like the lazy way out, right? Isn't it? That's what I see as the lazy way out. Those are the albums that people would point to.
Yes.
Totally.
They
so are. You could stop there and you could, I wouldn't go in this order. I would do red. I probably even pick discipline over this. But
I agree.
Yeah. But see, so let me put them back.
Here we go.
So, but this would be me. So, this would be me. Lark's Tongues, Wake, and that. But that's just me. I'm fine without that.
It's kind of funny. So,
but Lark's is, you know, Lark's is my favorite Crimson album. It may not be the best, but it's my favorite.
See, because Red is my favorite Crimson album. The problem that I have with Red is Providence. So, that's what makes it hard for me, because then I would go to Lark's, but I like the songs on Red better than I like the songs on Lark's.
Lark's, yeah.
But as an album, I think I like Lark's better because of Providence.
Right.
And Providence does, it just starts slow and boils to this great thing, right? But it's that starting slow that kind of bugs me. Yeah. Whereas the slow stuff that happens on Lark's, and the build that happens there, I appreciate more than the live kind of.
Because those kind of things, even the improvisation aspects, is all in the framework of a composition, right?
Correct.
Whereas Providence is a straight improv, but it's also out of context, right? Now we have all the live Crimson stuff. We know that came directly out of an Easy Money.
Yeah.
And then goes into, and it's amazing. Like that way, then it's like, wow, it's so much more powerful.
Yeah.
But be it as it may, it's like, you know, Starless and Bible Black is a wonderful album too, but you know, Starless and Bible Black, the piece, is really even more so to me than Providence, at least gets really heavy and aggressive. The Lark's Tongues, the Starless and Bible Black piece, just, you know, it's that slow build up and then it just kind of happens. It's a different kind of improv.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the interesting thing about them too, is even when they put out improvs, they're way different. I mean, you've got the Mincer, which is an improv. We now have that in unadulterated form.
Yeah.
We have the Trio within its context of a show. And more so than that, even though Trio is like fully realized in that version, they were, and that's in November. That would have been November of 73. When we start getting the live stuff, you hear them doing it in June, May and June. So
that's part of their repertoire, and they were
playing it a long time. Yeah. It didn't just come out of thin air.
Right. Versus We'll Let You Know.
Well, that's another one too, because that comes right out of Easy Money.
Yeah.
And so many great improvs came out of Easy Money. And, you know, for so many years, this is all we had. And then when they started putting out all that live stuff, all of a sudden it's like, oh, wow. You know, it just, that's probably what blew my mind the most. That's why Red, I can agree with. Like, I've always come, like, in my head, I was thinking about this. I'm like, I'm probably going to have to go with Red being the number one, only because that's what people do, and that's fine. Because it is a great album. I'm fine with that, you know? And I like Providence. I like it in that concept. But now that you know where it came from, it does feel like it's just excerpted and threw on there because they did not have more material. They could have had more material because we hear all these weird things on that John Wetton, Richard Palmer James
album.
And they talk forever about, you know, there's Red and there's a piece called Blue, you know, and there's all this other stuff. But they put the improv on, which again, at the time is fine because it was nothing for decades, but you know, I'm going to shut up.
Yeah, but as an album and how it holds together as the perfect album or whatever, that is to me the downfall of the album. Right. I mean, people might not, and you're not the world's biggest Starless fan.
I am not. To me, that's the side one is amazing. Like, I love side one.
Yeah.
And I like side two because I do like, for me, Starless is not, doesn't hold the same place that it seems to hold for other people. However, for me, it's worth it to be able to have to sit through the first, is it 10 minutes? to get to the end, because the end is the best. The last couple of minutes where it moves out of that solo thing and it goes into the big, big crescendo when the stage turns red.
Yeah.
That's the whole piece to me. Everything else is
the buildup.
It's I like the beginning and I like the end. The middle just and I know Bruford had a big hand in writing that. It just is not something that moves me as much as other parts of that album. Like I said, the Red into Fallen Angel and then One More Red Nightmare are great. But yeah, Larks would be number one for me, only because I like the way it works. It's an album.
Yeah.
And it was so different.
Yeah.
You know, it really was coming, you know, it was like, yeah, okay, enough of this. And, you know, Sinfield's gone, everybody's gone. And it just is this whole different direction. You know, it's also the reason I like this too is like, you know, he was very, you know, Fripp had stood up and took notice of Mahavishnu Orchestra. There's no doubt you can hear that.
Yeah.
You know, so it there is like kind of an almost jazz fusion-y aspect to some of this.
Sure.
That's not. That you
if
don't
you look
get.
At the change from here to here, it's a totally different thing.
Yeah.
I mean, the only crossover is the guitarist.
Right. Yes.
Right.
Exactly. Yes.
But
how true.
But it's also even his mindset
is
totally different in that band.
Right. Well, and you get on most of the bonus editions now, you get the bit. So probably around December of 71 or even earlier than that, the summer of 71 in some of the improvs, Fripp was starting to tease the Lark's Tongues Part 1 lines. And as the year went by, you heard more and more of that, and then it disappeared. However, when Islands came out, the deluxe edition here, there was they tried to record it. It's called a Stint Roll Unrolls or something. I don't know. It's a weird name. And do they have the titles and stuff on the back of that? Probably not. Something. Look at the bonus stuff. Something about
making stint unroll.
Stint unrolls. Where he's doing the Lark's Tongues line, and the rest are just following him. It's not really going anywhere, and they just abandoned it. But he was clearly going in that direction even before.
That
was kind of cool to start hearing again the live, you know, the DGM downloads of live things you could buy, and all of a sudden I'm hearing these shows because I like that band live. I don't know, there's something about it and the songs, I just love it. Even towards the end when people just, you know, when it's just these kind of boogie stomp things, it's just because Fripp's at least trying to do something. There's just some stuff on there. I was very, very Earthbound made a huge impression on me. And I was like, you know, and again, it was like it's we talked last
kind of,
time
kind
about
of funny because that
the first album and then hearing USA and being like, it's not the same band. And then hearing that, it's like, this isn't even the same band. What is going on with this freaking band?
Yeah. Islands has never been one of my favorites. I would take that off the table.
Oh, I have no issue taking. I love Islands. I love particularly beginning the front.
All right.
Terra Lady into Sailor's Tale.
Are we taking
those
all these
gone.
Off? These are all off.
And I'll tell you why. The later stuff, I prefer live. I just prefer seeing it live.
And I think we also have to think about that in the context of the album. What this represents, not necessarily what was happening around it or happened after.
That's true.
But what unto itself.
Yeah. I love Lizard, but I could easily see that going too.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean,
we can only pick three, so to me that's
this
not,
would never be my
it's
top three.
I love it.
Despite John Anderson's opinion.
And also, you know, more Yes Connections. If you're not familiar with the Island Sailor's Tale, that's what the Sailor's Tale box set that covers these years, they have a cappella versions of John Anderson doing
the Prince Rupert.
Prince Rupert Awakes.
All right.
So we know that. Now, what about, you know, three of a perfect pick?
It's discipline.
Of course it's discipline.
It is discipline. It can't not be.
No, of course.
This album, the Three of a Perfect Pair, you know, that you and I have these discussions that Adrian got them too song-oriented, and I like that stuff better than the improv-y kind of stuff that this band did,
right?
Personally,
yeah.
And I know you don't, but I that's my take on it.
It's not just that; it was also, you know, having been a Crimson fan before they came back in '81.
Yeah,
And to know, to have been a fan of theirs at that point for 4 or 5 years. I mean, they had broken up when I discovered them, but I was heavily into them. And it was like, you know, they're gone. They're this. There was no thought. And then, you know, and Fripp was doing his things, which were way different.
Yeah.
But I thought those were great, too. And then all of a sudden, it was like, there's this new band. Well, Discipline, first we read about that. And then they became Crimson. And it was like, King Crimson is back. Like, it was just bizarre. And okay, you know, and at that point, I'm young. And then when they came, and I'm like, and I can go. And I got the album the day that came out. And it was like, wow, this is something completely different. And I was already into Talking Heads and all that stuff then.
But so, but I think what's interesting about King Crimson in that context is that they've always been a band of reinvention.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it didn't really matter.
Right. That time you were showing like three distinct eras here that all sound different.
It didn't really matter because King Crimson always presented something that was different.
But the point I was trying to make is around the Discipline time, it was brand new. The songs were new. They were playing this album, but then they were playing other stuff that no one knew where it was coming from or where it was going. A lot of it ended up on beat. But some of it was instrumental. It was just a new thing. And it was a weird time, too. It's like I saw them. They toured a lot. I saw them in October of 81, and then they came back around in February, March. That was my favorite. I mean, it's weird to say I have a favorite King Crimson month, but that, but because they played the whole Discipline album, they were playing a lot of that album, but the album wasn't out yet.
Yeah.
So, you know, like the Howler was instrumental. There a lot of stuff. It was just, it just seemed like this is such a cool band. And then the that album came out and it was okay, but then Heartbeat, like I was like, what? You know, and then Three of a Perfect Pair came out, and it was just a little more polished. You know, there's just a little more polish and sheen to it.
This one?
Yeah.
Three of a Perfect Pair?
Yeah, and I was like, I don't like the songs as much as the...
I didn't like the songs as much, but I also felt it, it just had that industrial feel that was not really my jam, right?
As
I look at this, I'm like, I really like a lot of these songs.
Oh, I agree too.
But there is something about the Discipline album as a statement, as an album, and a moment in time when it came out that this one is definitely
that's it for me, man. That one's it for me. I completely agree.
I think we can take Starless.
We can take Starless out. Yeah, it hurts me, but it's a great album. But no, that to me of the three.
This one always felt to me like it was that middle album of the group that they had to fulfill the record contract, so they just took these clips of these live performances,
because
it doesn't have that feeling of an album like they got in and they put it in. And I might be totally wrong, but listening to it, it's not cohesive enough or different enough. It just kind of is a bunch of pieces
put
together.
That's exactly what happened. You know, they were touring and Fripp was the main writer and there just wasn't enough stuff. Now, what's interesting is that I'm fine this going away. But if I had to choose between Starless and Red, I would choose this.
You really would.
The juxtaposition, and so you got Great Deceiver.
Yeah.
Lament. We'll Let You Know. Trio.
Yeah.
And The Mincer. That's side one of that album. That is so freaking, that is like so out there. I mean, We'll Let You Know is such a cool improv.
Yeah,
Lament is a great song. Great Deceiver is kind of, it just, it's, to me, that one side goes through so many different, that's like King Crimson in an album side. Because on Red, it goes through some changes, but this is just like...
It's all over the place.
There's a song, then there's a heavy song that starts out as a soft song, Lament, right? I mean, and then there's improvs. And oh, by the way, then there's an improv that doesn't sound like anything. That's just all these mellotrons.
That's what I don't like about it from an album standpoint.
Yeah, but why I'm amazing is while Fracture is amazing... This version, even though it is live, the 73 versions never for me matched the spring 74 versions. Talk about freaking Crimson train spotting.
No, Lord.
They're just so heavier on that last US tour. It's just like, it's bludgeoning. Anyways, so yeah, so we got discipline. We definitely have one that we know.
We do.
So, but I've said it before, like, even though I think Lark's Tongues is, even though I prefer this, to me, that's a better album. That's, this is my number one Crimson album. You know, it's hard to like say, oh, no, Red, you know?
I think if I'm critiquing this album,
you can give it a try.
No, I think the only thing that I don't like about this album is the volume level of Lark's Tongues Part One.
Okay. Really?
It's like I struggle to hear what's happening at the beginning, you know, and that, and then I turn it up, and then all of a sudden I blasted myself out of the room.
Yeah,
that is the only thing that is my one critique on the whole album. Yeah. If there was, and people are probably like, blasphemy, how dare you even say that you would change?
I can't, the dynamic. I thought you were going to say, like, you know, the screechy shit at the beginning of Exiles, or the screechy.
No, that is what made this, like, I can't remember who
Lark's
it was.
Tongues. Two,
yeah.
It just worked. It just
no. I like the whole thing. Easy money, talking drum.
That's like one long suite. Yeah, that's like great. One long suite. It's just freaking amazing. Yeah, it is such an amazing album.
It's just that first
part.
Yeah,
I know. I hear you.
That's the only thing, because that's what starts the album, and it was like my intro to it, and I was like, what the hell.
It's just so cool. It's just so different. And then it's like, there's the sound of Lark's that. And then to hear them do Lark's Tongues when we saw them in 2014, that was just so.
And I think maybe, well, that's getting back to what we were just talking about. In a live context, you get that subtlety. It's a little more in your face.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, you know, I wear ear protection at concerts, and it's musician, you know, it lowers the volume. So people, you don't have to just put foamy things in your ear. Like, you can spend $15 or $20 and they're like musician's headphones. They just lower the volume. Anyways, when we saw them, I took them out there were two songs where I was like, if they play these, I'm taking the ear through, because I say I want to feel these and hear them. And it was Lark's Tongues and Pictures of a City.
Yeah.
And they played both of those. And I was like, yeah, the ear things are coming out. But here's the thing. It's like, I can see how, you know, Red is a great album too. This is a personal thing. It's like Lark's Tongues for me is the album, but it almost feels sacrilege to, like, you know, say, no, Red's gone for this, you know, but I, you know, that's
all right.
The
well,
one
we'll
I prefer,
leave. We'll
so.
Leave that there. Yeah. We'll leave that there because no. Then it's down to because you could.
I could get. I could.
You don't
I,
have to pick one from
I
each
know.
Level.
I could get rid of these two to keep those two. I could easily do that because. So here's the thing. Here. So this is like I said.
This is the shocker.
This is the shocker. No. I can change. I love this album. I don't know why, but there's something about this album since the day I bought it. I love it. Given that, I think Devil's Triangle is a waste of album. So it's like, that's always the thing. I listen to it. I'm like, this is, it's just so fucking lazy. It's like, you know, you could have come up with something, and they had stuff too. But anyways, I'm not going to get into that. It's just like, I don't know. There's something about Pictures of a City I've always enjoyed more than Schizoid Man. And I think In the Wake of Poseidon as a song is one of their top songs for me. Just the Greg Lake voice, the Mellotron, the lyrics, it's just this thing. However, I could never argue. Like, I would never want to debate, like, this is a better, this is like a top three album. I could say you can't argue that for Crimson as a band. For me personally, I think it is. And if Devil's Triangle wasn't there, maybe there were other things I could, but I can't in good conscience with Devil's Triangle.
Well,
you know,
isn't Devil's Triangle?
It's Mars. It's Gustav Holst Mars.
No,
that's
I know,
all it
but
is.
It's like, it's a big part of the album sound.
Well, of course,
like,
it's
time wise.
Like, yeah, it's
Providence on
two thirds of side two. And it's cool the way they have the Greg Lake thing coming out. And Cat Food is great. I love Cat Food.
I love
the
Cat
jamming.
Food.
But yeah, it's just, and it starts. Talk about it. You know, it's like, did this song start? And then it's, you know, the
Yeah, I know,
in the
but,
distance with the wind
right,
and stuff.
But if you take that off the album, that's, you only have 2/3 of an album.
It's an EP, and it's a great EP. But like I said, I don't. This right. I do not need convincing. This just get rid of it. Okay.
Okay.
I
won't wow. talk.
So, but this. So you can
this
make
is
this
hard.
Argument
this
about
is canon.
Child.
This is
I know.
The, but I that is my whole issue.
Yeah.
I like the 2-minute Moonchild that they put on Young Person's
yeah.
Guide better than is that where
well,
they put it? Where
yeah.
did they put it?
I have to tell you, I like it more in the modern era because they seem to have raised the volume floor so you don't have to keep raising it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're back to the full version, which I'm like, if you're going to put it on. But I agree. It was always, I've never understood their logic. It was, oh, we just tried to do something. And I understand that, but it's like you improv'd in concert and it was never like this. So this was a true one-off thing because they're in the studio and they did a quiet improv, but you only need a few minutes of it to get the shock of Court. But, you know, it really is. It's another side one, right? Like you can't fold Schizoid into Talk into Epitaph. It's just amazing. But I would never pick this as my favorite Crimson album. It's more a canon thing, right?
It's
it like is. When we get to Yes, you know, what do you have to do you choose between, you know, Fragile and Close to the Edge? Well, to me, the choice is clear, but it's the same thing, right?
Yeah,
like,
it is.
Can you have a top three without this? And that's what we're saying. And, you know, I think we can. That's just me, but I don't know how you feel.
So,
I mean, I can be convinced of this and we get a little bit of Lark's tongues, but
no, but then we'd be back to your theory at the front.
Like the theory of like, this is what everybody would pick. So,
but at the same time, if Emerson, Lake and Palmer didn't exist, I would keep this.
I can see. Yeah. Okay. Yep.
Because Greg Lake has another act.
That's true. That's a good point. That's a very good point.
And Fripp has another act. And, you know,
the other guys.
Yeah.
Ian McDonald's getting in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, so he doesn't need our help anymore.
Right.
Michael Giles could care less, I'm sure.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If this, to me, is more of the precursor, and this might be blasphemy, to ELP.
Yeah. Okay.
Than it is the precursor to
Crimson. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it took a while to get to this. He had to go through
a lot of
now, Islands, you know, Lizard and Islands are very jazzy. And then you kind of got the more rock side of that. And then it went where it went, which is interesting, too. Right. Because almost like you could argue almost to your point, like if Starless and Bible Black is so different, but if it didn't have that. They could almost be a completely different band if they didn't have that improv stuff on there and they had something else, whatever that was. Do you
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yes.
Because they had nothing. That's what they did. And that's yeah. what we think they are. But there is such a change even between those three albums, this Starless and Red. But yeah, I know. It almost seems sacrilege only because that is the start of... I've never looked and said, oh, yeah, that's the start of prog rock and all that. Whatever. It's a multitude of things, right?
Of course it is. You know? It's the right place, right? Yeah. time, but this is like
it is a poster child because everything, the entire package is something, and it's a brand new band. I mean, we also lose sight of that too, right? This is a new band no one knew anything about, and this is their first album.
Yeah.
Now people knew about them from this
cover.
Point, right? Now here's something like back to where we talk about bands going out and playing new stuff or not playing new stuff. So they, you know, this album I think came out in the fall of 69. So They had already, you know, blown people's heads off in front of the 150,000 people at Hyde Park at the Rolling Stones concert, right?
Yeah.
So people knew who they were. People knew the album was coming. And I remember on the Epitaph box set, and then, of course, these, I think they've done three box sets of this already. One of the shows, you hear an audience member ask Greg Lake, when's the album coming out? And you hear him say, when's the album coming out? And then Greg Lake tells him, well, we're hoping it'll be, you know, it's funny. I mean, you can barely hear it because it's a boot. But and that's in September of 69 in England. So, but anyways, I'm getting off a tangent here. This is, again, it's like a canon album, but we like Crimson, you know what I mean? Do you really need to pick a canon album if you like the band, right? Like you can make, it's like, no, you don't have to. I could totally live with those three.
And me too.
And we could even put this at the bottom, you know, like it could be Red, Discipline. Although I don't know, man, maybe Discipline's number one.
No, Discipline isn't number one for me.
Okay. It's gotta be Red then.
Yeah.
Well, and I can take into account, like, you took a lasting, like, this is the album people would point at, you know? And then if I look at these two, like, which is more radical, Discipline, you know? Maybe it should be Discipline.
Yeah, I could do that.
Discipline Larks. That I could easily live with. To me, I mean, if you listen to those three albums,
you got it. You understand the
right,
band.
You understand, like, but really, you know, and without getting into the, because you can also argue, like you were saying, that you see Court almost as the beginning of ELP. It's still part of that whole more Sinfield, Mellotron-y, different, you know, early Genesis-y, you know, that whole sound. Yes had it too. I mean, well, and then there's the difference of sound between Fragile and Close to the Edge.
So that's what it kind of gets me to with choosing this.
Yeah.
Did other people in the end, Sacrilege, do it better? Or that aspect of what they were doing, were there better versions of that versus these? Were there better versions? And I don't know that there was, because these two, the mid 70s or whatever, the late early 70s version of the band was its own thing. Anyone else doing that, but versus the first two albums was kind of like a genre.
Well, you could almost argue this is like the prog pinnacle realization of what Moody Blues started. You know what I mean? Like, this is
You could argue this was of its time because of what was happening at the time.
Right.
Versus these were their own thing.
Right. Right. But still lots of innovations with this that were swirling at the time and that kind of went on, you know, some of those decisions, less cymbals, the drier, that drier, left reverby sound, and things like that.
And the
interlocking guitars, too.
Yeah,
I mean, we got the interlocking with the guitar and the organ for League of Gentlemen, but this was an order completely different.
Yes.
And, you know, you listen to the, now all the stuff's available, you listen to the May 81 shows where they were still disciplined, and you know, they're playing songs twice because they don't have, but they're still almost fully realized. Oh, and that reminds me, I just saw Crimson is releasing the video for the Noise, they did in France, opening up for Roxy Music, video. So they're releasing that as a CD and an LP, and I'm sure it'll be available digitally as well.
Is it a DVD already?
DVD, but it wasn't full length.
Gotta
it was
be
like
down there somewhere
or something. So they took Sheltering Sky from the night before, and they added that on there. So, and I think the release is going to be called The Sheltering Sky. But anyway, so
are we happy?
I think we're happy. So the official Prog Will Find a Way podcast ranking for 2024, at least.
Yeah, because if we do it next year, it could be different.
It could change, yeah. Is in the number one spot, the classic King Crimson Red from 1974, 1981's Discipline, and bringing up the rear, 1973, Lark's Tongues and Aspic. I could just have those Crimson albums and have nothing else.
Yeah.
No, nothing else. No Crimson, I mean nothing. Like,
oh,
I,
that's it.
That I could survive on those three albums.
Your Desert Island disc of three.
I would be, you know, completely happy. And if I had to choose one, I would probably pick Lark's Tongue. So, but anyways.
Got it.
Yeah. If you could pick one, what would you pick? If you could only pick one out of there, what would it be?
Oh, I don't know.
Without the weight of history, like, what's your personal, which would you grab? Which do you reach for any out of these three more than any others?
Probably Red.
Okay, cool. So
there's a heaviness to Red. It's kind of funny because I'm not a gigantic metal fan, but there's a heaviness to Red that is really cool. So if I want to listen to something heavy, I'll listen to King Crimson Red as opposed to a heavy metal band.
Right. Now, do you skip over Providence?
I kind of do.
It's all right.
Although, not lately.
Right.
Now I'll just let it run.
Yeah. Yeah. There, you know, it's.
But I also the problem with this is that I started to listen to these albums on vinyl when they came out, and it was easy to just start at Starless and just skip it all together because it was the first track on side two, right? So I could just go and not listen to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's easy to do that on a CD too, but not, I think there's not, there the physical flipping the record over and starting and over. I could just right. I could just
right. And if you were making a cassette tape, you could just skip right over it, you know, that kind of thing. Either way, that's a trio of a really trio. Good a trio of
and
really
yet
good albums.
Not included in the trio.
Well, we did albums, not songs. I mean, that would be another interesting one to do.
Well,
that
was
songs.
Fun.
That was fun. So we'll do other bands in the future. Please, in the comments, let us know what your top three are. I'm sure there's people that
don't like any of these
logic at all. And are giving us the finger at this point. So no, we'd love to hear other people's. This is just us. I actually, you know, this was fun, but it's, believe me, there'll be more. I have a feeling some other bands is going to be a little more like, you know, as far as like.
Yes. Not having the same.
I can see
we're more simpatico on this one.
Totally, and plus we're kind of going for, which is funny. Like, you know, I gave all my reasons for the Left Hand, but at the end of the day, these may be very celebrated, and certainly these two, like people, you know, and but they're still a small culty band, no matter how you slice it.
But they're very celebrated, they're, you know, because
it,
of
right, and it's actually kind of cool that these are actually really good albums. It's not just what are the popular ones; they are actually really freaking good albums. Yeah. So, anyways, all right, we'll do more of this. All right. Woo. Well, King Crimson and Prague will find a way for sure.
If you wanted to.